Welcome to With the Wind, Science Revealed. You're never going to guess who our guest is today. None other than Del Bigtree of the High Wire and ICANN. He's like a brother to me. In fact, I fashioned this show just wanting to be a little bit like Del in the High Wire. He's covering his State of the Union. He's covering those things he feels are most important for us to be aware of. And we're also going to dig into the man himself. You're not going to miss a moment. Enjoy the show. Dr. Paul, coming to you from the heart. My topic today is standing for what you believe in, no matter the cost. Several really great individuals have spoken to this issue. MLK said, "The ultimate tragedy is not the oppression and cruelty by the bad people, but the silence over that by the good people." Desmond Tutu, "If you are neutral in situations of injustice, you have chosen the side of the oppressor." He was living through apartheid in South Africa. Albert Einstein, "The world will not be destroyed by those who do evil, but by those who watch them without doing anything." We've been through a time, folks. I mean, this whole COVID-19 years, if you will, now, I can't believe it's gone on that long, has really shone a bright light on our situation. I mean, how many people have made excuses, rationalizing why they had to follow orders, you know, to mask, to socially isolate, to cause their kids to be socially isolated and masked, and to actually subject their own bodies and sometimes those of their children to take an experimental shot that we now know to have been extraordinarily dangerous. And the writing was on the wall in the beginning that this was not a good idea. But we had reasons, right? Well, I'm going to lose my job. I won't be able to go to school. I won't be able to travel. I won't be able to, you know, even go into a bar or to an event. We gave up so much when we refused to stand for what we believed in. So I remember one time I was giving a talk to a large group of freedom individuals, doctors and lawyers and scientists, and one of the lawyers really came on hard afterwards and told me, "I need to shut up or I'm going to lose my license." And I remember just going, "No, that's ridiculous." Del Bigtree was there. He wasn't on the program, but he went up, grabbed the mic and said, "Folks, we've got it all wrong if we're going to choose to be silent when we know what's actually going on." And he talked to that audience and said, "We need more people to stand up." And that's my call to all of you watching. It is our time, no matter in what little way it may be, to stand up for the truth, stand up for justice, and do what you know in your heart and soul is the right thing to do. Welcome, Del Bigtree. You are the CEO of the Informed Consent Action Network and the host of The High Wire, the most important show in the world, in my opinion. Thank you for being on With the Wind, Science Revealed.
It's awesome to be here. It's always a joy, Dr. Paul. Looking forward to it.
So you're like my hero. Your show, The High Wire, is the show I try to emulate. And then, of course, we've shared the stage multiple times. You're usually the closer. Folks, if you've never had a chance to hear this man in person, you've got to make that opportunity. You're just so powerful. And when I speak with powerful individuals who are making such a huge difference in the world and putting their own lives really on the line, I wonder if we could get to know you a little bit. What is it in your background? Can you share a little bit about your childhood, your career, that prepared you for what you're doing today?
You know, every time I get a question like that, you know, you sort of look at your whole life in review and say, how far back do I go? You know, my childhood, I think, is a very important part of this. And it's something I like to celebrate, and I don't get to talk about it all the time. But, you know, my parents were what I would call very conscious parents. They were really, really invested, especially my mother, in, you know, raising us with a certain set of principles and ideals. Now, my parents were both, I would say hippies in the 1960s, they marched against the war. They're politically active people, very outspoken. My father became a minister, and he oftentimes would cross the line, I would say, growing up on church and state. It didn't matter to him. Very opinionated, strong, powerful, brilliant speaker. My father, one of the best speakers I've ever seen. So I grew up around a great speaker. So that obviously has a great deal to do with it. I ran a show. I mean, what people don't think about when you're a preacher's kid is you're putting on a show every single week. I was the sound guy from the time I could turn a couple of dials at 6 years old. I had to be in church every Sunday around 6:30 in the morning. And my dad at one point had three services with like 1,000 people per service. It was a really big deal. In Boulder, Colorado, where we grew up. The speaking was there. The sort of putting on a show was a very big part of my life growing up from as long as I can remember. But the most important part of it, I think, really gets back to how I was raised. I've told this story before, but it's sort of one that I think really, I want people to hear it that are having children, because as you know, and your life, and I'm so honored to get to talk to you, your dedication to children, which is the future of humanity, has always been so important too. But I tell the story because it's just a good example of the many crazy things my mom would do. But we were in public school. I was in, third or fourth grade at the time. And we went to a school that was about five blocks from where we lived. And my little sister, she was 3 years behind me. She was in kindergarten or first grade. And we went walking off to school one day. We would walk home for lunch. And we came home for lunch, and I remember my mom, looked at me when I came to the door, and she said, "Del, what happened to the T-shirt you were wearing when you left for school this morning?" I had left in a T-shirt I'd made in art class. I remember we had done like a batik dye thing where you used wax and dye, and I decided I was going to try and write letters, and I pulled it off, and it said The Flyers, which was the name of my gymnastics team. So I wore this shirt that I'd made, but I came home without it on. And so when she said, "What happened to it?" I said, "When I got to school, my best friend Craig said it looked stupid. And so he lives right next door to school. I just went to his house and borrowed a shirt real quick." And I will never forget the look on my mother's face. And that look led to the last moment I ever stepped foot in a public school, or at least an elementary school. She pulled us out of school immediately. And she said to me, "I am never going to raise kids that make decisions on what other people think. You are going to be inspired by your own guidance, your own intuition, your own connection to God. No one stands between that and you. You are going to learn to question authority. You are the authority in your life." And so, and she stood by that in just millions of examples I could give. Ultimately, that was third or fourth grade. I returned to school in 10th grade to go to high school. But I was raised, and I want to say that is not an easy way to raise kids. And I'm attempting to sort of emulate that in many ways with my own children, which is question authority, that, don't just do something because you're told. And by the way, when you're questioning authority as a child, the only authority you know is your parents. And so I don't come from this space, children should be seen but not heard. Just do what you're told. I remember, seeing an article about this a little bit. And someone in this article is a really great reference. They said, I was sitting on a plane and there was a child on the plane, and I heard the person sitting next to them after the plane ride was over. They said to the parents, "What a beautiful child you have. What a great job you've done parenting. I didn't even know they were there." And the writer was saying, can you imagine if you got a call from, your child's now an adult, and from some business associate, and say, "What a great job you did with your child. When they're at work, I never know they're there." I mean, that isn't the recipe for success. It's not the recipe for being a dynamic individual. And so I think we really have to look at how we raise our children. Are we raising them to make it convenient for ourselves, or are we raising dynamic individuals that can lead us to a better future? There are people that hate me, there are people that love me, but I am the product of parents that said, there is nothing that is outside of your grasp, and there is no one but yourself that stands in your way. Speak your truth and be guided by that. And that's what puts me here.
Yeah. So I want us to cover what's going on with ICANN. I want to cover some of the big things you've uncovered in your investigative journalism about COVID the last 3 years and all of that. But you were going along happily producing The Doctor's Show. And what caused you to change course and get into what you're doing now?
Well, I mean, you know, like I said, and that's a whole beautiful and powerful story. But I ended up working on the CBS Talks for the Doctors, which was, there was an irony to it since I had really never been to a doctor in my life. I grew up with parents that were very much into, I would say even beyond alternative health. My parents are in many ways, mind over matter, spiritual healing concepts, things like that. So to end up on a medical talk show was very unique and interesting. My mom would call me and say, why are you working on a medical talk show? You've never been to a doctor in your life. I said, well, I'm good at telling stories, and that seems to have got me to this place. And actually, you know, a lot of the stories I'm doing, there's seven total producers. I'm one of the top rated producers, and I'm actually challenging in many ways the stories, the medical establishment. And my stories that I'm fascinated by are acupuncture. You know, Cleveland Clinic is starting acupuncture instead of anesthesia, or chiropractic's being used in a major hospital, or less invasive techniques, or diet issues, or things we're discovering about drugs or drugs that have gone bad or chemicals. And so I sort of used that platform. I never really changed who I was. It wasn't like stumbling onto the vaccine issue changed my life. I was controversial, and that controversy inside of that space, challenging it, really the audience really responded to it. And then, of course, I stumbled, you know, I was actually an inside source brought me the story of Dr. William Thompson saying there's a whistleblower inside the CDC that's saying they're committing scientific fraud in the vaccine safety studies. It was one of the few stories that, you know, when I pitched it to my producers, they're like, we're not going near that. We can't attack the CDC. They're a friend of the show. We're not going to go after Merck's MMR vaccine, which is what this story revolved around. They're a sponsor of ours. And so it just was, I couldn't go near it. And that's when I finally came to an intractability, if you will, where I had an ethical problem with a story I believed needed to be told. I wasn't being allowed to tell that story. And through an incredible set of what I would say are miracles and really running headlong into your destiny, I ended up being a part of making the documentary Vax, From Cover-Up to Catastrophe, about that whistleblower, Dr. William Thompson. And that changed my life forever. It's continued to be, one of the most interesting and vivid investigations anyone could ever imagine. And, you know, look, journalists and what we do and, you know, investigations, that's what you're passionate about. You're looking for that big story, especially a story that everyone else is avoiding or you're the only one with it. That's what Vax represented. I remember saying to Andy Wakefield, you know, who is arguably, you know, probably more bold than either of us put together, one of the most controversial doctors of all times that first really dared to look at the connection between vaccines and autism. But I said to him, you know, look, I'm about to really put it all in line here. Just one thing. Are we sure we're the only ones telling this story? Because I don't want competition here. I knew I was going to destroy my television career. I didn't know how this was going to turn out. But I just wanted to make sure we're the ones that are really on this story. And he said, as far as I know, Dell, everyone else is afraid of it. And that, you know, has continued to be the case until recently. Now you see Fox News talking about vaccine injury. Now you're seeing other Joe Rogans and other, you know, podcasts, which is great. I mean, thank God I have competition now. Thank God people are waking up to this issue. But it's been amazing, man, to have 8 straight years of one of the most important investigations and stories of our time, and no competition in sight has definitely put us on the map and made it easy for people to know where to go. And that's what's happening with the high wire. We're exploding at the seams, trying to figure out you know, how to catch up with staff to continue to deliver not just, I think, one of the most important and one of the best produced news shows there is, but to continue to be able to finance a growing legal battle through the law firm that I work with, Aaron Seary and Glimstad. Aaron Seary, I think, will go down as one of the great constitutional attorneys of all times. But, you know, we are literally fighting the government of the United States now. We are winning lawsuits against the FDA, the CDC, National Institutes of Health, Health and Human Services. We're doing things that no one ever thought could be done, and we're succeeding at it. But the more, you know, I think with you or anybody, the more you're successful, the more you realize is possible. And so I'm still dwarfed and humbled by the size of the job ahead and what I know could be possible if we could get more people involved, more funding involved.
Absolutely. And ICANN, where you are, you know, having your legal battles, is a nonprofit that folks can donate to, and you need funds to do these major battles. Maybe share briefly two or three of the top successes you've had in the legal world, because it feels like nothing changes sometimes until you get people in legal hot water.
Yeah. So, I mean, like I said, early on when we got started, we went after the government. What we realized, or, you know, what everyone knew at that moment, was you can't sue a vaccine manufacturer, really, because of the liability protections that came from the 1986 Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. For anyone that may be hearing that for the first time, essentially the industry blackmailed Ronald Reagan, said we are losing so much money from death and injury lawsuit cases against our vaccines, we cannot make a profit. Therefore, we're going to stop making all vaccines unless the government protects us from liability. You know, Ronald Reagan hated the idea. It's a terrible idea to give an industry, especially one that is as dangerous as pharma is, that is got such an incredibly checkered history of putting out products that they know kill people, thinking they can cover it up. In the rare cases we're able to prove they knew it, they pay out billions of dollars and move on. So to give this group, this industry, liability protections, insane. But then again, you had a president like, I don't want to lose the vaccination program. I don't want to go in down in history as the president that destroyed the vaccine program. And so here we are. For the years that I got involved in this, every lawyer I would talk to say, Del, there's no way to go near that issue. They're liability protected. Aaron Seary, in some really deep conversations and brainstorming with him, we came to the conclusion, well, wait a minute, the government took on the liability. So the government is holding the liability. That means they're holding some of this internal information. Let's start suing them. So that's how it started. We've had a lot of success there. You can go back and watch all the shows over the years. I don't want to sort of, it would take too long to lay out. But the idea was, Paul, that if we could win enough what seemed like trivial lawsuits, just little issues that we were seeing, but what the government didn't see was each one of those was an arrow we were putting in our quiver. Every time we would get them to admit that they never did the proper safety study on this, they never formed the task force that was designed to make vaccines safer, since clearly they were under so many lawsuits there was a problem. They never, you know, went to Congress and explained how they were going to fix the program. So each one of these wins was an arrow that we were putting in our quiver for a future we were building to. And now what people are watching through ICANN is what we are doing, and now we are weaponized. Now we are walking to civil cases into courtrooms. We're going into cases against laws like the minor consent for vaccination law that was passed in Washington, D.C., where they said, I think it was a 12-year-old child could vaccinate themselves without parental approval. It was passed. It was a law. We went in and we brought all that we now have the CDC admitting to, all that, you know, Health and Human Services admitted to in our lawsuits. We are now invincible. They're no longer able to say, well, it's safe and effective. Really? Because this is what you stated in court when we sued you. All of that is working in our favor. So now we're winning really big lawsuits. We've also really developed a powerful relationship with the FDA and the CDC because we've sued them multiple times, because we keep winning. They now recognize they can't brush us off anymore. We don't go away. And one of the critical parts of this, it's only possible because of the audience that we have and the sponsors that we have. Because you have to realize, Paul, what the government was getting away with was they were waiting everybody out. Even if someone brought a lawsuit, they would just make it take forever. Who's got a lawyer that's going to be able to stick it out? And all these cases that we're fighting, they don't have damages. They're not going to pay out. Government doesn't pay out money. We were just getting to admit that they'd either committed fraud in some way or hadn't done what they said they'd done or that they'd lied to the public. And so these cases cost sometimes millions of dollars, but what we don't get that money back. What having the support that we've had and the worldwide support to allow us to just stand there and say, we're not going away. We're not going away. You can try to wait. We are going to stay on you. We're going to tell the world you're making us delay. We're going to show them what's going on. It's the ability to stand and bring forward lawsuits that in the end don't pay us with anything except the truth. That is what has made ICANN so unique, is that this nonprofit became incredibly litigious and is now having success. But none of that's possible without everyone out there watching that donates and allows us to stand in the room when they know they're making it expensive. You, by supporting us, are saying, don't step down, Dell, we're behind you. And so I think the big recent cases, obviously, we all heard, and this is one of the things with the cases we do, is not just can we win the case, but will this case either set precedent for the entire country or the world, or does it make a press moment where we can get people to wake up because of what's just happened in the courtroom? I think one of the big cases that showed that was when, you know, Aaron Seery went out and sued for the Pfizer data, the Pfizer trial data. In the work that he did there, and the doctors we brought, Peter McCullough and a lot of them, they put their names in front of that. You know, we brought what support we could. But that case, the FDA was trying to hide the data that they used to approve the COVID vaccine for the world, essentially, for 75 years. Really? It's so safe, you don't want anyone to see it for 75 years. That is a lawsuit that was won by Aaron Seery. And I think that that has affected scientists and thinking around the world. Right behind that, we sued for the V-safe data. That was a fully funded ICANN legal case against the V-safe data. The CDC had built an app to track all of the injuries from the COVID vaccine, at least in the people that signed up to this app, which ended up being about 10 million people. So remember, the trials of Pfizer and Moderna only had 40,000 people in the one trial, 30,000, which is still large, 30,000 the other one. This is the data of 10 million people, just like the FDA. The CDC was trying to hold this data back, hide it from the world. We fought in court for over a year. In fact, had to bring three separate lawsuits because of how they kept trying to wind their way out from under this. And we finally pinned them to the wall and got the V-safe data. And once we got it, we realized why they were hiding it from us. What we saw was essentially, I think one of the biggest, most shocking numbers was in this app where it was basically, you know, did you seek medical help, hospitalization after vaccinations? That number alone was, you know, somewhere in the around 800,000 of the of the 10 million people, meaning I think it's roughly 7.7% of those that signed up to this app got the vaccine. That means, you know, 7%, 7 out of 100 sought hospitalization and medical care from that product. That means it's one of the worst. It's certainly, you know, on record, one of the worst pharmaceutical products to ever hit the market. And it's not lost on most people probably watching your show. We're seeing people dropping dead. We're seeing athletes dropping on the field. We're seeing the blood clots. We're seeing the myocarditis. But because of ICANN, we now have evidence from inside the CDC. So when they tried to say, by the way, they tried to say that their V-safe data was showing us that the injury rate was about 1 to 3%. And so when we got it, what we realized was they were limiting their search to the first week of data that was coming in. And what they didn't tell us, only in the first week after the vaccinations, up to 3% are being injured. But your data was being collected over months. When you took the totality of that, it hit 7.7%. This is all what we are the CDC, the FDA's worst nightmare, because we're showing the people what is really happening in there. Those are all really big cases.
Yeah, huge. So are we going to get the Childhood Immunization Act of 1986 repealed? Because that might solve a lot of problems.
You're right on what I think is the most important issue of our time. And frankly, you know, I didn't, you know, I haven't set out to make vaccines my, you know, my only life mission. And when we sit around, I'm not trying to build a nonprofit that lasts forever. I don't care. I'm not UNICEF. You know, we have a mission. We are trying to get to the truth. And we're trying to really ultimately get to the point, Paul, where everyone has a choice. That's it. It's a free country. I want freedom. I want the United States of America to be that beacon of light and hope and liberty and freedom that represents to the world. And when we have a mandated product, like we just saw Joe Biden, I can't enter a place of commerce or a market or do my job or enter my church or go into a grocery store without you forcing an untested product upon me. We have real problems now. That has to be fixed. And so I think, you know, you got your finger right on the button. If we can, you know, get rid of the 1986 Act or certainly amend it so that you are not protected, the industry is no longer protected from, you know, liability from these products that they're making, I think I can walk away at that moment, because the truth is this market will rectify itself. We would never see the COVID vaccine. The vaccine manufacturers made that statement. AstraZeneca was really critical. Belgium was trying to stop liability protection, saying, we're not going to protect you. The executive for AstraZeneca said, if you don't, you won't get our vaccine, because we cannot be held responsible for an injury that appears 4 years down the road because our trials were too short to detect that. They said it right there. They know it. So if we want to really just fix this system, we just got to get back to what America does best. Let people make their choices. Let advertisers advertise. Let the government even say, you know, we really believe in this product, but keep from enforcing it on me, and make sure that whoever made this product is liable, and you will watch this vaccine program change overnight. They would not continue with many of these vaccines, because what they know are the actual health outcomes that are taking place. There's too many injuries going on, and it just does not justify the advancement they say that they've made. So a big order for all of us. And this is something we all need to continue this conversation with our elected representatives. It's not going to happen overnight. But I do believe the culture around this conversation is shifting as we speak. And COVID, as catastrophic as it has been a real wake-up call for our politicians. If you're watching these Senate hearings that are taking place, you can see finally the right questions are being asked about the COVID vaccine. We want to continue, and we are continuing to pressure those leaders and those doctors that are stepping out to now look at the issues that you've uncovered with the childhood vaccines. And ultimately, we will never be safe from an experimental product like we just saw with COVID being forced on us if there's liability protection. So we've all got to work at this. I do see that that is going to come down in the relatively near future. For as long as I've been here, the 8 years that I've been in this conversation, I have a feeling it's going to take less than that for the world to wake up and America to wake up to. This is a terrible way to do business. We can indemnify an industry that knowingly lies to us all the time and pays out billions of dollars for the deaths they've caused with their other products. This product is no different. And by the way, their argument used to be, well, we don't make money from vaccines, therefore that's what puts us into a deficit. In most of these manufacturing companies now, Pfizer, Merck, Sanofi, Aventis, they're you know, their number one, two, or top of their three products are vaccines. This COVID vaccine has made tens of billions of dollars for Pfizer, tens of billions of dollars for Moderna, AstraZeneca. So I will say this. If what you're saying is true, that the injury from the vaccine is one in a million, I think the tens of billions you just got will be able to cover that one in a million issue that you say is out there. Go ahead, stand behind your product.
Exactly. So you've said that this last 3 years has been the greatest crisis, the biggest story in history, and that hasn't been covered. I feel like there's still a lot of censorship going on. We have to go to the high wire to get the truth, to get the real information. And unfortunately, still a large segment of our population is asleep and listening to the news as if it's fact, when they just say almost the opposite. I mean, where did this virus come from?
From the very beginning, we have been stating, you know, the science is never settled in many ways. And until we get direct evidence of certain things, then the question must always remain open. And when it came to lab origin, we were one of the first ones to ever actually state that, to discuss, you know, Farron cleavage sites, what looked like inserts into this virus that didn't seem to be natural, at least the opinion of many scientists we know. Now we are getting the details that scientists that were actually speaking to Fauci and working for Fauci were saying exactly the same thing now that we have internal emails showing that. We always, I mean, come on, it just... In some ways, you know, I think the way I was raised to question authority and to also just be a critical thinker, when you have a virus that breaks out and you have, they say it's at a wet market, but the wall right next to that wet market is a laboratory that is, you know, experimenting with coronaviruses, and you say we're going to totally write off the fact that it came out of that lab and just focus on the wet market, that just didn't make sense. It didn't make sense. And in some ways, as soon as I see a real, you know, concerted attempt to shut down a story, I'm wired to look even harder at that spot. Now, the world's looking at it, and most scientists would agree. Most of the science really, the reigning theory now is it came from the Wuhan lab. Incredible statements by former CDC Robert Redfield, saying just amazing statements that he always believed that that's where it came from. Will we ever fully prove it? You know, they did a really good job of covering it up at the moment. You would have had to get in that lab. I mean, this is what's so disturbing and why I'm working hard to have Tony Fauci and Francis Collins, head of NIH, arrested and put in jail. This is something that potentially did kill innocent people. And to think that our government agents that were in charge of looking out for America put together basically a fake team of investigators that were all a part of the investment into the Wuhan lab, sent basically the people they needed to go and cover up their own tracks to say we investigated and there's no there, and now we know there was a there, and every decent scientist is admitting that. If that's not treason, if putting your entire nation and your civilians in harm's way to cover up your financing and interaction with a laboratory that was making exactly the type of virus that has affected those, you know, around the world, this isn't over. And luckily, I'm not the only one saying it anymore. And it's too bad CNN and MSNBC aren't covering it. But we are watching senators now asking all those exact questions. And I'm talking about Massey and Rand Paul and Senator Ron Johnson and, many others. So this is a fascinating, fascinating time to be alive. It's horrific for those who are in harm's way. But truly, all of this, to me, makes Nixon and the Watergate scandal, all of what we're watching right now unfold before our eyes. We're watching a president that hid a family issue in his son's laptop, using the CIA to do that, using the FBI, referencing in newspapers to 50 of America's, best investigators saying they are calling this a Russia hoax. All of these things that are being uncovered, I don't ever remember seeing corruptions at this level. And finally, some investigations are starting to take place.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what scares me as a pediatrician? I'm retired, but my background was pediatrician for 35 years. Somehow, and we've watched them do this, we know how, a lot of corruption, as you mentioned, they got this jab, this COVID gene therapy product approved for the childhood vaccine schedule. What do you say to that?
I say it's criminal. It's criminal, and the death of every child that's caused by that should be on the hands of Rochelle Walensky, you know, Tony Fauci, everyone involved in this, the FDA, and certainly everybody in the Virbac committee that, you know, was sort of pushing this ahead, and everybody in the Advisory Committee of Immunization Practices. They will not be forgotten. This will go down in history as one of the greatest scientific injustices and catastrophes of all times. We're reporting, on our show, Germany is now starting to really admit the truth. Their health minister has come forward and is now stating officially the COVID vaccine injuries are real. He's admitting to it being at least 1 in 10,000. He's upset that they're not paying it out correctly. He feels bad for all of those that are hurt. Sure, he's still saying, you know, I stand by what I said. But we now have, I think, our first representation of basically the Tony Fauci of Germany, a first world nation that has, you know, the same affluence that we do, now admitting to the injuries that are being caused. This house of cards is crashing down all around them. And there are going to be a lot of individuals and scientists that knew better, that were staring in the face of charts inside of the CDC showing the rates of myocarditis in the studies we were looking at in Israel, knowing this was swelling the hearts of children, knowing it was causing blood clots, thrombocytopenia, and still approving it for children who have a death risk with COVID of, let me, I think it's 0.0003%. Okay? That is a zero, folks. So for zero risk, they are giving a known risky vaccine. It is the first time in history I can say unequivocally that the science tells us the vaccine is riskier than the virus itself. And now it's been forced by government agencies. This will not stand. I do believe in why I'm so focused on this issue. There's no issue like it. This is the tip of the spear when we think about cleaning up our government, when we think about, cleaning out the swamp. This is the issue that does it, because this is the one that affects every single individual in this country and, frankly, around the world. We are all told we had to be a part of this process. And now we are seeing that these people will lie, cheat, steal, and push dangerous products upon us without any, form of ethics involved. And so this is where, if we penetrate through this space, I believe it outs all of the problems we have in modern society, all of the buyout of our media and our major news stations, all the buyout of our government and the lobbyists and the money that's purchasing not only our politicians that are being elected, but those we don't elect, when we think about those that are taking over positions at the CDC, at the FDA, at the EPA. I think you've heard about it, you know. I mean, I've heard Robert Kennedy Jr. is considering running for president. There is a man that knows where the bodies are buried. There is a man who has been literally fighting these regulatory agencies his whole life. I can't imagine anything more unbelievable and fantastic than to imagine a moment where, if he decides to do something like that, it comes to fruition. That is how you fix your government. I'm not anti-government. I'm not anti-regulatory agencies. But I am for regulatory agencies that protect the citizens of this nation, not the corporations of this nation. And that's what we have now. We have a government for the corporation, by the corporation. We need to return it to a government for the people and by the people. And the vaccine issue is what can deliver that to the people that are waking up en masse. And by the way, let's forget about those that are sort of brainwashed by the mainstream news. We can focus on those that haven't, you know, woken up yet. Let's focus on how many did. 30% of America didn't touch this vaccine. Another 50% probably didn't want it, but only took it under duress. And now somewhere around 10% are going along with the CDC recommendation to get their next booster, meaning 90% of those that once believed in this government, believed in the CDC and believed in this product, are now stepping away from it. This is the time we all have to use our voices, and it is our time to march into Washington, D.C., to march into our state capitals and demand change immediately.
Yeah. Your State of the Union, Del, wow. It's like, okay, everybody needs to watch this. You know, I usually wrap up an interview with, you know, what do people need to know? And I think you pretty much covered it in your State of the Union. I don't know if you want to touch on a few points of, people need to know.
Well, I mean, I think I've touched on those points in a little more detail here with you today, but this is something we started doing, I think it was last year. This is our second State of the Union. We decided that there really should be a medical State of the Union, you know, because the health of our society drives the economics of this society, drives, you know, the power of our society, and to leave the health outcomes and what is going on and what is not going on the floor doesn't make any sense. and said, we've been stating our State of the Union from our perspective, from ICANN's perspective, that you can find on the highwire.com. I did lay it out, but essentially, just what we said, we had the government of the United States push a product that never made it through proper safety trials. They bailed out of those safety trials early. They forced this product onto innocent people, saying, you know, threatening their jobs, taking away their jobs, taking away our ability to travel, our abilities to go into hospitals and get. I'm still getting people calling me saying they can't get an organ transplant because they can't get a vaccine. Those hospitals, those doctors should be arrested immediately. We now know the COVID vaccine doesn't even work. Everyone knows it doesn't stop transmission. It does nothing to protect anybody. The only thing that it can do is cause swelling in your heart. So it's amazing that a heart transplant can't be done until you get a product that could swell your heart. It's amazing that you can't, you know, go in for all these other issues, whether it's liver, all these things, when we know that's where we're finding the spike proteins from the vaccine is delivering to your soft tissue places, your organs. This is insanity. And, you know, I guess in some ways, as horrific as it is, this is what it was going to take for all of us to wake up to the fact that, unfortunately, medicine is no longer on our side. The Hippocratic Oath is dead. The, you know, do no harm to your patient. To deny your patient a transplant because they're not getting an ineffective vaccine is doing harm. Again, as a part of the whole revival and what I believe is going to happen, that bright future, it's only going to happen if we stand for our truth. If we stand for our power, each individual. America was designed for the power of the individual. We are not a communist system. It is not the power of the group of us. We are powerful because of our individuality. And I think Ed Griffin said it best. For those people that believe in collectivism or want to move into some socialism space, all you do is take away incentive. But if you put the individual in charge and you put the onus and the power into the individual very quickly learns, I can't do this by myself, that my community is what makes me powerful. And then the nature of what makes us connected comes through our individual power, not from being robbed from it. That's basically what I try to get across in our State of the Union. And it's what we're going to work towards is the empowerment of the greatness of individuals who I personally believe are endowed with rights by God, created in the image and likeness of God. That is what our Constitution protects. It doesn't protect our government from us. It protects us from our government. And it's time for us to use that power again. And as I've said it before, we've got to put our government back on the leash. They're trying to put us on a leash. No, no, no. They are the dogs. We are the leaders. They're back on the leash. We need to put them where they deserve to be.
Amen, brother. We're going to wrap up today's show with a new segment. We want to put kids first. And I'm going to have Dee Dee Hoover, my partner in Kids First Forever, chat with you a little bit about what parents need to know. I know you're a parent, so this should be fun.
Hi, Dell Bigtree. Thank you for being my first official Putting Kids First interview. So the first question I want to ask you is, what's it like around your house?
Well, I mean, you know, what's it like? My house is chaos, okay? Everybody's house is chaos. I mean, it's, you know, we're all very busy people. I'm a very busy person. I have and I would say that the beauty of what's happening at my house is really more to do with the fact that I have just a spectacular partner in my wife, Lee, who is really there for our kids as I am fighting for the children of the world. I am one of those individuals that is incredibly dedicated to the work that I do. Most people that have been watching me see that I travel a lot. And so, you know, it is really, there's a lot of pressure being left on my wife to make sure that my kids find the balance that they need. And when I'm around, you know, obviously I am, you know, really dedicated to my kids. We just had a brilliant spring break together and got the family all up skiing together, which was great. But like I said before, in some ways it's beautifully chaotic because in my house, as I had stated to Dr. Paul earlier, my kids are allowed to state their opinion. They're allowed to push back if I give them a rule. And the rule in my house, and because, you know, what I do and the work that I do really does say that, you know, question authority, you're allowed to question authority. And in fact, we sort of look at everything as a legal case. I've said to my kids, you're allowed to make a legal case, you know, when I'm telling you to do something or whatever. And so sometimes there's that pushback and I hear it out. And on occasion, they make a really good point and they win the argument. It's funny, my sister was visiting recently. My sister that doesn't have children, and I was having this interaction. My son was really kicking back all these different points, and my sister literally jumped in and said, "Will you just do what your father told you to do?" And I said, whoa. No, that's not your position. Thanks for stepping in here. But he's actually exercising the right that we allow in this household. I said he's in the middle of making an argument, which he's allowed to make. It's not a very good one at the moment, but he'll find out why. But this is what we do here. So there's interaction. There's conflict in my house. I want it to be that way. I don't want some sterile environment that my kids walk out in the world are shocked that the world's not bending over and making it all easy for them. You know, I realized in the way that I was raised that part of my job as a parent is not only to be nurturing, but to also be that entity that creates a natural environment where there's pushback from your world. You're allowed to make your arguments. I'm going to point out where you haven't made the proper argument. And when you do things wrong, there are consequences to doing those things. But my kids love me. They're fantastic. They're spectacular. They play their instruments and practice their music because they enjoy it, not because I'm forcing them. They're great in sports. They're doing really well in school. And so we have a chaotic and beautifully natural household. Well, and look, and there are parameters. It doesn't go on forever. You know, I tell my kids, bring your best case. Bring your best case forward. I'm not going to sit through, you know, a bunch of retrials. You get one trial. What's your case? Okay, I'm overruling that. You're going to do what I said. And here's why.
And that's why I asked you that question, is I think it's important to have parents see and other people see. Because I'm, you know, I'll hear people when they come in, I have a picture of you up in my office. And I mostly do that to tease Dr. Paul. But my best public image is you. Well, I have these moms come in and they're like, oh my God, have you met him? He's so great. And I said, yeah. And I said, what I've seen though is that soft side to you. And when you're speaking, whether it's this interview or anything, there's this Dell Big Tree that comes through. And I think it's important for people to know that you probably do go through some of the parent issues and traumas and things that everybody does. But people don't think you do, Dell. They think that it's your world's like this perfect thing. And I think that's what's important, is us putting our kids first is so critical. You're putting the world's kids first. You're putting our children's future first. And I can see your children in years from now, like how you talked about how your parents raising you. I hear them saying the same thing. What do you think if, say, I interview your children one day, what do you think your kids are going to say about you as a father right now?
My son hasn't done it for a while, but a few years ago, like in the middle of all this, he would say, the great Dell Big Tree, you know, it was sort of a funny thing that he would do. You know, I can't speak for them. They're individuals, as like anyone else. You're trying to figure out what's going on in their head. I can tell you what I hope they report about, you know, their life. And it's what I report about my parents. My parents weren't perfect. They weren't always fully stable when we were having the arguments, and neither was I. I mean, there are moments, and, you know, it's a natural environment, but so is the world. You know what I mean? But I will say that what I want to instill upon my children is that, you know, live life passionately. Do what you love. I mean, that's what my father really said to me. You know, he said, you know, we have a lot of people in this world. There's a lot of competition for everything that's out there. It's not going to be easy to be successful at anything you want to do. So what I would say is this: do what you love to do. And because that's the only thing that you will do enough woodshedding, enough practice, enough work at to actually make it. Don't put yourself in a situation where you compromise yourself on a daily basis, where you hate what you're doing because you think you owe, you know, some model of fatherhood or parenthood or familyhood. You know, we should take advantage of this incredible life moment and time that we have. And I think that for my kids, no matter how long I'm here, I hope that they reflect and say, what we know about our father is he spoke his truth. He was uncompromising with the things that he cared about. And he was passionate, and he woke up early in the morning every day, really jazzed to be alive, even on the days where he was screaming and yelling and clearly something wasn't going right. He was passionate about it. I hope that they see that, because that's all that I can be as an example for them. In the end, it doesn't matter how much I teach them, what they really, the more teaching than the words we say is what they're observing and watching. And I think they've been able to watch my success. Most of my success in my life has happened in the last, you know, really short period of time. So my son and my daughter, they're part of that experience. And so I hope they live passionate, heartfelt, intuitive lives.
Well, and they certainly will if they're going to follow in your footsteps. So next one, and this is, I think, the most important thing I want to get to is, what do you say to the dad, to the parents out there, like just in Oregon with the mandates to play sports and things? So when I talked to some of these parents who got the COVID jab for their children, they said, well, they had to get it because they had to play sports. Or even worse, well, my child wanted to get it. Their friends were all getting it. What can you say to those parents?
Well, I don't really know what to say to the parents that have already made that choice. I don't want to put people down for the choices they've made. You can't undo what's been done. So for them, I pray for you. I hope that that choice works out for you. But for people that find themselves in situations like that, I was speaking recently and someone in the audience, there was a sort of a Q&A, and they said, you know, I was almost forced to get the vaccine by my job, but then it all sort of changed right at the last minute. And I said, you weren't almost forced to get the vaccine by your job. You were almost given a good opportunity to leave your job. There's nothing that makes us take anything. And what I really am concerned about, and this people that I know, I think deep down they feel like they know that there's a problem with it. They know there's a potential for injury. But somehow by telling themselves I had no choice, you know, that they will feel okay if their child ends up being injured by it. And I can tell you, I have interviewed thousands of vaccine injured children. There is nothing that you will ever be able to say to yourself that alleviates the guilt that you feel, because you do recognize that it's a choice. One of the most important things we have got to recognize is that, you know, we are not in Nazi Germany all over this country. Some states are worse than others, some cities, some school districts. It's time to move. It's time to move to a different job. It's time to move to a different school. It's time to stand and picket outside of that school with your child and show your child what civil disobedience and standing up for your rights means. All of that, yes, that's what you do. What you do not do is injure yourself or put yourself at risk to kowtow to an unjust system. If we do that, we will be China by tomorrow. We will be Russia by tomorrow. We will be North Korea by tomorrow. That is not the lesson we should be teaching our kids. And God forbid we learn the lesson from what happens to our kids. And so I would say move. I have a very close friend who only had one child of five children that was having real difficulty in a school, really starting to have issues with how they saw themselves. And he picked up his work, his wife's work. They picked up their whole family and moved to a totally different state, to a different school district, putting at risk, obviously, the other four kids, all to make sure that that one child had every opportunity to make it all okay. And it's worked out. It hasn't been easy, but they made it work. That is what parenting is. Parenting is caring enough that you do what is necessary. If your child's a great athlete, find an athletic school that is going to allow them into it.
Exactly. And same with colleges. And thanks for saying that, because that's the whole point of me interviewing you, is how important it is to put our kids first. I have that mother's guilt for not knowing what I know now, years ago. So now, yeah, I can stand my ground, but that's the thing, is talking to other parents. And when they hear that, I think that's important to know, is that it may not be easy, but to say that somebody else coerced you or somebody else forced you, this is your baby, this is your child. And no matter what age they are, they may not know better, but in order to put your kids first, you have to stand your ground. Yeah. So I mean, thank you.
I left I left California for exactly that reason. I risked it all. I mean, we had Highwire was successful. We were in California in the middle of Hollywood. I started realizing when I was getting calls from people in California saying my child fell out of a tree or whatever, broke their arm, we're at a hospital. They're now saying that they have to get a Tdap vaccine in order to be released to me. Now it's come out that I haven't vaccinated or haven't gotten all the vaccines. They're calling Child Protective Services. I would send lawyers into those situations or whatever it took and was able to intervene many of those times. But I said to my wife, honey, This is not an environment for us to raise our kids in any longer. And partly because I was traveling all over the country. I'm not saying everyone should run. Definitely for all those people standing and fighting in California. People like Amy Bond at PERC, who I'm working directly with, just an amazing warrior, and others like them. I can't name them all, but I'm glad they're there fighting. It is the front line, but I wasn't able to fight in those specific battles. And if my child ever ended up in a hospital where they're calling and his last name or her last name is Big Tree, it just was getting too risky. So I left, I moved to Texas. And I told my team, by the way, you don't have to follow me. I am telling you it's getting too bad in California for me. And I've got to do what's right for my family. I will figure out how to make it work. We'll maybe do this over the internet. I don't know. Luckily for me, almost all of my executives, all of the major team decided at that time to make that same move. So we were lucky. But I didn't wait to hear if they would make that move to make that decision. I had to act on what was right for me and my family, and that is what we did.
Right. And putting your kids first. And I know the parents are, again, they'll hear this, and those parents who get wrapped up in what everybody's saying and well this and well that. But and I had always wondered that too. What were the ages of your children at that time? I'm curious on that because I kind of lost the timeline with it.
That would have been roughly 4 years ago, which puts my son at about 5 years old and my daughter at 5 or 6. No, I'm sorry. My son at 11 and my daughter at 5 or 6. Yeah.
So right. I think that's important. People ask Dr. Paul and I both that same question. Why are you staying in Oregon when it is like it is? We've had so many families that have moved because they put their children first. And for me, if I had a child that the age of your kids, I would be out of here. But yes, I think it's important that people stand and fight. But don't you think people can stay and fight and do so from this strong doing what's best for your kids' state? If you're going to stay, you don't have to agree to do what other people say.
Yeah. And look, I want to be really careful that what I don't like doing is I'm not here to tell anybody what they should do. What I will say is what we all have to learn to do is to really sit down and get quiet and put all of the chatter out there, all the fears and concerns about job and finance and what the news is saying. What we have to get clear on and look to our intuition and say, what am I? And this is where I really carry my spiritual practice. And I don't mean to force that on anybody, but I really try to sit with God and ask God, what am I supposed to do here? And if the message to me was stay in California, I would have stayed in California and made that work. My message was it's time to leave. That's all any of us can do. You've got to really sit down your guidance. Make sure that you're in alignment with your spiritual life, your intuition, not with your fear. Not with your fear of what's going to happen with your job. Not with your fear of what happens to your house. Fear is not the place from which we make our decisions. We've got to make our decisions from power. And so for everybody out there, these are incredibly, incredibly complicated times. I would never say that there's a singular way that you need to deal with this, but I will say learn to get quiet, learn to shut out everything else, and just really get down to the essence of who you are, what you stand for in your family, and make your decisions from your place of power, not your place of fear and weakness.
Exactly. And on that note, that I think is the piece of with our Kids First Forever program is the physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual. And no matter what that spiritual piece is for you, like you mentioned, it's not about forcing anything. I think for people to hear from you and hear that personal note, that's what's so important to us is we need to know that even though you're out there and you're fighting, you still have this home that you come home to and you're raising your children that way because you love them and you care about them. And thank God that God told you what to do and to get out of there, because you're doing some incredible things, Del. And it does make a difference to these families. They do listen to you. I hear it all the time. And whenever we're speaking with you, I always tease, Del's the one that just pounds at it and he gets out there. And it reminds me that I can fight loud too. I tend to, I work with babies all day long. And I work with parents who are having all these emotional, mental struggles about what to do, what's best for their kids. So that's why this is really important. And thank you for your time. You mean a lot to a lot of people.
Thank you. And, as you said that, again, I always just want to make sure I'm giving as clear a message as I possibly can. Yes, I am very outspoken, but there are places where I would not be outspoken. And I want to be careful to say, when I hear parents that find themselves in a difficult situation in a hospital because they stated that, we don't take vaccines, that I do not believe. That is where you really got to use some intuition, right? Is this the time and the place with my child in the hands? They're not in my hands, they're in the hands of this system. What do I need to say right now that stands in my truth but doesn't compromise the situation that can get out of my control? So, we really have to, work with guidance and be smart about the decision we make. And I've said this before. I've been outspoken. I believe everybody needs to speak their truth when it's important and when it's necessary. But you also have to ask yourself, is this the time? Is this the place? Is this what I'm supposed to do here now? And listen to that guidance. Because there are times, there are really scary moments out there. They're very dark individuals or misguided individuals that can really put us in harm's way. I'm not saying yell from the mountaintops every thought that you have whenever you can. And then again, because you say people think that because that's what they see of me on the show, being brave, being bold on stages. There are still moments and situations where I quietly move through because this is not the time or the place for this conversation.
Right. And don't you think those are the keys to communication too, is to meet people where they are? Listen, hear their story. It isn't always about yelling at someone else, because if you yell at them, they just put up this wall of fear. And that's why I think that leading with love, and you see that. I'm not telling everyone you get out there and yell all the time, but I think that's the important thing. And especially in a hospital, and we've seen so many situations and you've helped so many people who have had their backs against the wall. What do you want to say to the other fathers out there and the other parents out there? What do you want to say from your heart?
I want to say from my heart that I think this is a very hope-filled time. It is time to be hopeful. That is where I gather my strength. I wouldn't do what I do if I believed that somehow we lose or we're not protected. I want us all to stop wasting a lot of energy. We all do it, right? I can't believe how stupid they are. I can't believe they fell for it. I can't believe they're still lying to me on the news. And we're focusing on the negative, right? We're living in a glass is half empty position. I'm kind of an eternal optimist, so I want to share that. Look at the beauty of what's happening around us. Look how many people are waking up. Look how many difficult conversations are now being made easier with us, with our relatives, with our friends. They're coming around. They're saying, when you first started talking about this, I thought you were crazy. Now I want a little more information. We've got to believe. We've got to believe we have power. We've got to believe that the world is ours, that the future is bright, because I truly believe that we do not believe what we see what we believe. And whatever we are stating as our belief is how the world is reacting to us. Stand in your truth, stand in your power, live in your love, see the best of what's happening around you, and you will be an empowered individual, and people will be shifted and changed by that. And that shift and change is how we change our world.
You got it. Again, thank you so much.
Thank you.